Welcome to Prostate Pros Podcast. We're guiding you to treatment success and avoiding prostate cancer pitfalls. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Scholes, here with my co-host, Liz Graves.
Today on Prostate Pros, we're addressing the desire to just cut the cancer out.
Suggest a more aggressive response, like surgery, could save lives.
We need to get surgery better, and it's a call to arms. Let's do more research. So in certain people, we do certain different things, radiation surgery, hormonal treatment.
I did want to make a point about active surveillance, though, because men need to know if they have this. It can be watched for years and years and years before you have to have a surgery, and the surgery's a big deal. I'm not going to kid you.
When you finally came to the decision to treat this, you opted for removal of the prostate.
Yes.
There are other options. Why did you fall on that option?
Because that's what my doctors recommended.
Cancer's out, and that's that.
Wow, so once...
Hopefully. After a year, I'll know for sure, really, that I'm out of the woods.
Right.
But it looked like we got it.
Why is surgery so popular for prostate cancer? The prostate cancer landscape is unusual because prostate cancer is the only cancer where surgeons are in the driver's seat. All the other cancers, lung cancer, colon cancer, brain cancers, all these different types of cancers are supervised by cancer experts called medical oncologists. Why is prostate cancer such a backwards industry? 40, 50 years ago, surgeons were running all the cancers. But as the world became more complex and technology progressed, one by one, the medical oncologists started taking over the management and only referring specialty cases for surgery. The prostate cancer world is the only exception to this procedure. And to this day, urologists, who are surgeons, are in the driver's seat and controlling the prostate cancer decision-making process.
Yes, we've talked about that before, how urologists have this leadership in the prostate cancer world. And so a lot of men get surgery because that's the only advice they're hearing.
It's not really apparent to patients when they're thrown into a diagnosis. The urologist is the one that did the biopsy, and he's the one sharing the bad news that prostate cancer has been diagnosed. So it seems very natural and a smooth transition to assume he will continue in the leadership position. It's obvious why surgery is so popular. Is there any problem with that? I mean, surgery seems like a natural solution for just about any type of cancer. The problem is the location of the prostate is in such a sensitive area of the body, and it's nearly impossible for the surgeon to finesse the prostate out without causing some collateral damage to urinary or sexual function. Historically, that's what you were stuck with. The other options like radiation were very antiquated, caused a lot of side effects, had poor cure rates. But as technology has advanced over the last 15 years, radiation therapy, in my professional opinion, has become much better than surgery. I suppose we shouldn't be surprised that the urologists have been a little bit slow to adopt this new policy because it involves referring their patients to a specialist, and they therefore lose the opportunity to practice their own craft.
Yeah, to someone who isn't in the medical profession, it makes sense to just cut the cancer out. It seems like a one-time procedure. You go in, you get it done, and it's gone.
Yeah, and about a third of the men that have operations have a fairly good result. They'll be able to get erections. They won't be leaking urine. But those sorts of odds are terrible. Imagine that. Two-thirds of men either have the cancer come back, or they're having a terrible problem with urinary leakage, or they've lost their ability to get erections. It's not a satisfying outcome at all. I'm glad we're having this conversation and raising awareness about the fact that other newer, better options, such as many of the radiation therapy options, are really far superior, assuming, of course, you go to a center of excellence where they have state-of-the-art equipment.
Okay, so surgery hypothetically removes the cancer, but then you have to deal with these problems that are incontinence, impotence, and you don't even know if the procedure has removed all the cancer.
No, that's true, Liz. The problem is that the prostate is so close to the bladder and rectum, they're not able to cut a wide margin around the prostate like you can do with a colon cancer or a breast cancer. The problem of leaving cancer behind is really a frequent issue. Now, the surgeons talk about, well, we can just give some radiation therapy to kind of mop up afterwards. But think about it. Why wouldn't you just do the radiation to start with and skip the surgery step altogether?
That's something I read a lot about on comments on our Instagram, is that men hear that you can't have surgery after radiation.
Yeah, that is probably the most common argument I hear surgeons giving to patients to encourage them to proceed with surgery rather than radiation. The problem with that is that two things. One is that the older time radiation, the stuff that was like 15 years ago, had really poor cure rates. And so men were faced with trying to fix a messed up partial treatment that was ineffective. And doing surgery at that juncture was very difficult. So it was a fair argument 15 years ago when radiation technology had low cure rates. Modern radiation has very high cure rates, especially the seed implant radiation. So the issue of having to go back and do a mop-up procedure is really quite rare after modern radiation. The other point is that actually it is possible to treat men, the rare cases where cancer stays viable in the gland after radiation. It's not like you're out at sea without a paddle. There are surgical experts that can operate on people in this situation, but surgery usually isn't the best choice. There's a lot of other secondary options, such as freezing with cryotherapy or high-intensity focused ultrasound called HIFU. And these different therapies work quite well to salvage a situation, the rare cases when the radiation doesn't get at all.
So between surgery and radiation, if you have the option of both of them at the same stage in your treatment, why are men still choosing surgery over radiation despite cure rates being better with radiation and side effects being less?
I think it's because the surgeons have the first shot at selling their particular treatment. They did the original biopsy. They have an established relationship with these patients. And surgeons, inevitably, are very optimistic about the results of surgery. It's really their whole life. Their identity is wrapped up in doing surgery. When patients don't have the kind of facts and information necessary to make a balanced decision, and they're talking to a surgeon who's very, very pro about doing surgery, you can see how a lot of people sort of end up in the operating suite.
Okay, but this is something that's all over the media. Like, everybody knows that surgery is an option for prostate cancer. You hear Dr. Drew had successful surgery. Ben Stiller had surgery.
Absolutely. It is very popular, and it's a big industry, a multi-billion dollar industry. The universities are heavily invested in these robot machines. And of course, the men that undergo surgery aren't talking about the fact that they're wearing diapers or that they're ejaculating urine during sex or that they're impotent. These are extremely embarrassing, very private things, and it isn't widely known how bad the results are. Men simply just don't want to talk about it. But let's go back to the idea of a very powerful financial industry, the multi-billion dollar prostate industry. There are places around Southern California where I work that are advertising for prostate surgery, advertising for prostate radiation. There are millions of dollars spent on marketing. There is a great impetus to encourage patients to come get treatment with these different centers that are trying to make a large profit and become successful and to basically have large numbers of patients getting treatment at their center. So it's very natural with these sort of incentives that these places are going to kind of soft pedal the potential side effects, because they know patients can go to another place right down the street. And I see a lot of misrepresentation of the risks of surgery, occasionally radiation, but much more frequently with surgery. Many optimistic predictions, which are really very inaccurate.
One would think that celebrities have a lot of access to this information, have more options than the normal person, but they're still getting surgery.
What happens with, obviously, these people go to prestigious centers, and it's only been 10 or 15 years ago that surgery was the best choice. So these centers have built up a lot of momentum, and they're operating on a lot of people, and they are slow to make a transition to giving radiation rather than surgery. So you have these these experts, the supposed prostate cancer experts that are very excited about what surgery has always been in the past and aren't very comfortable with the thought that maybe something is a better option. And this is slowly changing. The awareness is getting out there. But the surgical industry for prostate cancer is very powerful, has a lot of momentum from the past, and it's going to take a while before people start to realize that these other options, particularly the radiation options, are a much better choice.
Ralph Blum, your co-author of Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers, referred to robot surgery as high-tech glam. He wrote a blog post about this. It was about how kind of there's this opinion about robotic surgery being the next big thing, even outlasting the advances you've talked about in radiation. And one of my favorite quotes from it is, "So yes, the robots have landed. And whatever else is still uncertain, one thing is for sure. They employ first-rate Madison Avenue publicists."
Back in 2004, radioactive seed implants were the most commonly used treatment for prostate cancer. And then the Da Vinci robot came on the market, and the surgeons thought, wow, we finally rescued our favorite mode of therapy. And Da Vinci surgery became the way to go from a surgical perspective. What are the advantages? Well, there's a smaller scar, and people go home from the hospital more quickly. But sadly, they showed no improvement in potency rates or incontinence rates. So it's more of a superficial advantage than a true leap forward. Now, it took 10 years for all that data to come in and realize that the Da Vinci surgery is only a small incremental improvement over older surgery. But the studies that have been done to compare standard old-fashioned surgery with Da Vinci are clear-cut, and the results are in now. And those results show only modest benefits over the traditional approach.
So this is robot-assisted surgery we're talking about. Could you explain a little bit about how that works?
Yeah, so one of the tricky things about operating on a prostate is that the gland is way down in the pelvis, surrounded by the bony pelvis, and surgeons with small hands actually had a real advantage in operating on the prostate. The Da Vinci is, they use devices, little pincher devices, to reach down into the pelvis so the surgeon doesn't even have to be next to the patient. He can be at a remote site, and these little robotic arms under his control can reach down into the pelvis and sew and cut and remove the prostate. This is why they can operate through much smaller incisions. In the old days, people would have a zipper-type incision that would go all the way from the lower part of the breastbone down to the pubic bone. And that's why the healing time was much longer with older surgery. Robotic surgery has led to quicker healing times. But sadly, as I stated before, there's no difference in the rate of preserving erectile function or maintaining urinary control.
Is there a difference in maintaining longevity of life with robotic surgery?
Well, that speaks to the question, of course, of cure rates, and that has also been shown to be identical. The cure rates with old-fashioned surgery and with the new robotic surgery is the same.
I'd imagine that the doctor performing the surgery has something to do with cure rates and side effects as well.
That is an established fact. And as we go through and talk about these different options like surgery and radiation, cure rates, side effects, and whatnot, I'm assuming that a patient has done due diligence and exercised a lot of care in the selection of the doctor that's going to do the procedure, because skill levels are paramount. But when we're talking about comparing surgery with radiation, I'm talking about comparing the results from the best surgeons with the results from the best radiation therapists. And when you make that comparison, these results from surgery are far inferior to what modern radiation therapists can accomplish.
So you still have patients that are convinced that just getting the cancer out is the best way to go. How do you address those thoughts?
I try and point out how much other forms of technology have changed over the last 10 to 20 years. I pull up my iPhone and I show a computer that I can hold in my hand that 15 years ago would have taken up my whole desktop. The same type of progress has been made in radiation therapy. You can see why surgery would be sort of stuck in the past. Surgery is just surgery. But the very refined pencil beams, the computerized targeting, and all the different planning that is done with a modern radiation therapy machine has become so much more effective, precise, and has improved the delivery of high doses of radiation to exactly where you want it to go in such a fashion that the results are clearly superior.
So if that's the case, why don't the radiation oncologists argue this more clearly?
So one of the problems we see in this industry is that the radiation oncologists are getting all their referrals from the surgeons. There's a few exceptions. For example, many of the proton centers are advertising on the radio and they're getting their patients directly from the public. They're not referred from another urologist. And in those places, they market their treatments very aggressively and they will try and go toe-to-toe with the surgeons and explaining why their treatment is good or better than surgery. But most radiation therapists have close relationships with urologists because radiation therapists don't do biopsies. And radiation therapists don't diagnose prostate cancer the way urologists do. So the urologists control the flow of referrals. And if they send a patient to a radiation therapist who says a lot of negative things about surgery, to get a second opinion, for example, they're not going to refer to that doctor anymore. They'll find another, quote, wiser radiation therapist who understands the way the industry works and who will say positive things about surgery. Well, why would they do that? They'd never get any business at all, you'd think. Well, the reason is that surgeons recognize that in more elderly men, men that are over 70 to 75, that surgery is really not a prudent thing to do on anyone, let alone a prostate cancer patient. And so they'll let the radiation therapist keep those patients. And that's where the radiation therapists get their business. In the older population, the savvy business radiation therapists are referring the younger men back to the surgeon with encouragement to the patient, saying, really, surgery is in your best interest, even though they know that the technology they have is better.
Dr. Scholes, earlier you said only 1/3 of men are happy with their surgeries. Is that true?
So this question of satisfaction rates after radical prostatectomy has been carefully researched at large universities. And the surgeon who's able to get a good outcome on three levels, that means preserve sexual function, not leaking urine, and remaining in remission or being cured, that has been termed the treatment trifecta. And trifecta rates, where all three of those things come out favorable, have been reported from a number of large centers where they're very good at doing surgery. And if you look at trifecta rates in young men, say 50 to 55, you're looking at 50 to 60% satisfaction rates in these younger guys. But the average prostate cancer patient's 65 when he's diagnosed. And the chances of achieving satisfaction in all three of those areas is only around 30 to 35%. These numbers are really sad. It makes you wonder, how can the doctors live with these kinds of numbers? And historically, men didn't have any other option. We were trying to save a life. We were afraid the cancer would spread and kill people. And so paying a price in quality of life seemed to be totally acceptable. Now, of course, we realize there are better treatment options. And maybe in another podcast, we'll talk about the newer thinking is that many of these men don't need any treatment at all. They can pursue a type of therapy called active surveillance.
I hear that all the time, that once you get your prostate removed, you don't have to monitor it, you're done. Men believe they'll be done with monitoring. Regardless of whichever treatment men choose, they will need to continue ongoing surveillance for years after their treatment.
As we're leaving this topic for today, let's be reminded that many men mistakenly believe that after the surgery, that the problem is gone. We should all be aware that there's a possibility that the cancer will be left behind. Men are going to need ongoing monitoring after the operation, checking their PSA every 3 to 6 months for up to 5 years afterwards to make sure that the cancer is not coming back. So surgery is not the final word. The cure rates with surgery are lower than modern seed implant radiation. So if patients are looking for the holy grail of getting cured, they really should go a different direction than surgery. The fact that men need ongoing surveillance for years after treatment is really actually a good opportunity for men's health in general. Men don't like to go to the doctor, but when they've had a history of prostate cancer, they're pretty good at showing up. And this is the time where men can have their blood pressure checked, their cholesterol, be screened for colon cancer, have appropriate vaccinations administered, and the like. Men's health is greatly neglected, and sometimes what seems to be a negative thing can actually work in men's favor.
If you have additional questions to ask about this topic, you can send them to podcast@prostateoncology.com. Quick reminder, if you haven't registered for the PCRI conference in September, the deadline is September 1st. Visit pcri.org. We're excited for next time, so don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts.